Proactiv MD.
From MakeORx and Proactiv MD, this is Healthcare Explained with Vinay Patel and me, Jeremy Vanderknife. This is the second part of our pilot episode, so if you haven't heard part one, go back and give it a listen.
Let's move on to our healthcare explainer so we can provide some interesting information to all of our listeners. The topic is non-traditional healthcare providers. And Jeremy, you have an interesting story to share here with our audience. Tell us about the power of patient advocacy.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that drew me to, I come from a public health background, actually. I spent about a decade working in public health. And so public health are probably at the forefront of using non-traditional providers, community health workers, social workers, disease investigative specialists and intervention specialists who are typically CHW trained. Part of the Proactiv MD model is embedding a social worker within the care team as a patient advocate. And, you know, they work alongside the provider to be able to address social determinants of health, to be able to engage patients in care. And shortly after I started with Proactiv MD, and I've had the honor of helping to build the patient advocacy program here, especially looking through a data lens. And one of our first patient advocates that we had was working with a manufacturer in South Carolina, and she had set herself a goal of, you know what, now that I know who the chronically ill within this population are, it's in a rural area of the state, she said, I'm going to set myself a goal of 100% of them engaging in care.
Wow.
And so we provided her with the data. And again, she's not walking up to people and saying, Vinay, here you've got diabetes, right? Come on to the health center. But making sure that all of these patients knew that they had this benefit available for them, free primary care, right, available on site. And she had gotten to 99%. But there was one member with diabetes who had not engaged with the health center. And so she figured out, okay, this individual works third shift, so they're not usually there during the day. And let me stay late and find an opportunity to meet this person. And there's something about social workers just have this ability to draw out of people, get them talking in ways that, I love our physicians, I love our nurses. There's something special about social workers, and started to talk to this person. And it turns out that this patient, she was a single mom. And she was actually living in this inner car with her two kids in the parking lot of this manufacturer.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, she had told our patient advocate, she said, look, I don't know where my next meal is going to come from. Mm-hmm. How do you expect me to worry about diabetes and taking care of myself? I've got these kids to feed. That's my first priority.
Yeah.
And so this patient advocate said, I'm going to fix that for you. And was able to connect this member into first transitional housing, then housing assistance, food resources.
Oh, wow.
Get her and her family enrolled in some of these community programs that are available. And that
taking
patient
care
then
of the basic needs.
Taking care of those basic needs. So it's barriers to healthcare access.
Right.
Those social determinants of health. And for me as a data analyst, it was hugely gratifying knowing, like, hey, we started with a diagnosis over here. And it's not just about getting somebody in for a primary care visit or hitting some kind of a benchmark. It was, we were able to work together, and this patient advocate, who again is not a physician, not a nurse practitioner.
That's right.
Able to go out and actually totally change the trajectory of this patient's life. And
yes.
You know what? She did come in for care. We were able to get her diabetes under control once we took care of those basic needs. And so, you know, it was interesting because I was at a conference, speaking on a panel at a conference at the beginning of last month on health policy. And it was a panel on non-traditional health providers, which is kind of what sparked, you know, having this conversation here today of we're seeing a lot of change. And I think it's much needed change in the broader machines that drive our healthcare system. You know, the insurance companies, the health systems, federal policy, state policy, all starting to realize that there's an opportunity here to leverage community health workers and community health doulas, social workers, these, you know, kind of lumped under this idea of the non-traditional healthcare provider to say, hey, now that... Maybe we're 20 years plus late to the party to recognize that there are social determinants of health. And if we want to see the outcomes in population health and reducing the cost of care, we've got to do something about this. And recognizing that it's not always a physician. They have, especially when you've got physicians in a fee-for-service world with 30, 40, 50 patients on their panel in a single day that they're trying to treat, to actually be able to take the time of saying, I'm going to connect you to the resources that you need. And even a step back of, let's talk about, you know, what's going on at home that might be keeping you from achieving the health outcomes that you want.
That's right.
Vinay, I'm curious, especially in the pharmacy realm, in your experience, have you seen or worked with non-traditional healthcare providers, community health workers, et cetera, in, you know, in clinical practice?
Yes, we have. You hit on an important point that I want to highlight for our listeners. That is, healthcare is a team sport, always has been, always will be. It's going to take a village to take care of people. Doesn't matter what kind of care they need. It's going to take all of us to help take care of human beings. And what that means is, to your point, there's going to be physicians, there's going to be mid-levels, there's going to be doctors and nurse practitioners and physician assistants, and there's going to be community healthcare workers involved. There's going to be medical assistants. There's going to be nurses. There's going to be, mirroring to that, on the healthcare team, there is a whole pharmacy team that takes care of people. And to your point, pharmacy also on this healthcare team can identify certain signals or certain data points in the data that will highlight that there is a social need here. And it doesn't have to come from the pharmacist. The pharmacist is just one part of a pharmacy team. I have seen numerous cases, and we have patient advocates in our team that are pharmacy technicians. They are certified pharmacy technicians that know and understand pharmacy, can do everything except talk to a patient about their medications, counseling that a pharmacist does. But they have so much knowledge and information that when they hear on the front lines about an issue or a problem, they're helping patients navigate the pharmacy world. And it's completely different from the medical issues in the medical world, and helping people access and understand their benefits and making sure that they're optimizing and utilizing it to the best of their abilities. And that's just another member of this team that's now identifying adherence problems or safety problems or financial problems that a patient has or what's going on at home. And then you have this whole new class of community health worker-like people, which are delivery drivers for these local independent pharmacies. They go out to these patients' homes. They see things. They hear things. They experience things. They see the neighborhood and the environment and the places that these people live and work in, and what their family structure is like and what kind of needs that they may have. And they can bring back valuable information that we may not be able to get when people are outside of their home setting. And so it's going to take all of us. There's plenty of opportunity for patient advocacy and patient navigation in medical and in pharmacy. And I think that's just what makes us and what the work that we're doing so powerful to helping these patients now really get healthy from all angles, from all perspectives.
I love that. And your mention of, you know, delivery drivers, et cetera. I mean, this is where the key thing for community health workers and patient advocates and other, you know, doulas, et cetera, is they come from the community. They are of the communities typically that they're seeking to serve. And so many times, especially with more marginalized populations or underserved populations, there can be an inherent mistrust of the healthcare system because maybe the healthcare system has failed them individually or their family, ignored them, introduced barriers to access, doesn't speak their language, whatever the case is. And people respond better to somebody who looks like them, who speaks their language, who understands their community. And I think that's where we're finally seeing national policy. And then it's trickling down into state policy. In other cases, states have actually created the pilot programs that have served as evidence for national policy change. But it is around how can we embed these within healthcare? So, what we're seeing is kind of over the last few years is new reimbursement models coming from CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services up in Washington. We're also seeing it with BUCA plans as well, right? The Blue Cross, United, Humana, et cetera, where they're now allowing mechanisms and creating mechanisms for being able to actually have a provider be reimbursed for community health worker services. So, you know, this is still a bridge to cross, as I don't think policy yet has caught up to the idea that you know, what do you mean healthcare can happen outside of a doctor's office, right? But so today they can't bill on their own. There's not a mechanism for a community health worker to just be able to go out and start a community health worker practice and and bill Blue Cross or bill Medicare. But in conjunction with a care team, there's now reimbursement and incentives to be able to pull these folks onto a care team. So some of those services that are now billable, and again, it's under the PCPs or the provider's NPI number, but it's administering an assessment of social determinants of health. Medicare also has community health integration services. So that would be like that resource navigation and the story that I kind of opened up with of, you know, helping to connect a patient who has housing insecure or unhoused, be able to get access to those resources, as well as patient illness navigation services. What folks with high risk complex conditions like cancer, multiple sclerosis, things like that, now that community health worker, non-traditional provider, is able to provide help with planning, caregiver support, helping the patient navigate the complexities of the healthcare system. And now that becomes a billable service when done in conjunction with an evaluation and management code again. So they're not going to allow them to just kind of go out and find patients. But when a patient's been established with the PCP, now that PCP can hand them off to that CHW or other non-traditional provider to be able to provide some of those critical services to making sure that the patient's needs are met. Here in South Carolina, we our own Department of Health and Human Services in the last few years has also started allowing community health workers to bill for patient education services. So either providing one-on-one patient education or health literacy or nutrition services, whatever it is of education, or actually providing group classes as well. So if you could get a group of community members together and teach them about diabetes prevention, then even though that person is not a licensed RN or they're not a physician or nurse practitioner, now in South Carolina, they can bill for those codes with special CPT codes to be able to get some reimbursement for that.
That's fascinating. And I think the beauty of having near-site and on-site clinics is employers don't need to worry about all of these additional claims or additional costs to their health plan because it's all bundled in to the services. And now we're really getting back to the top of the conversation of value. You're getting more value for your care when you have on-site, near-site clinics because all of these services can be bundled in and it doesn't necessarily increase their costs on the health plan because they're already paying for it. And we're all finding the best way to maximize those fixed dollars that go to running a near-site on-site clinic where you have pharmacy support services, you have community healthcare workers involved in the care of the members that are near this near-site on-site clinics. And now we can really optimize just taking care of the patient and figuring out what's best for them, whatever resource they need on this care team. The physician or the primary care doc is going to be the quarterback, and you've got all of these resources that can help them now. You got running backs and you got wide receivers and you have, you know, a defensive line. And so all of these people now coordinated can now really help this population of folks that we're serving with employer groups. And we don't have to worry about all these billing codes and all the complexity that comes outside of that world.
I think that's where particularly self-funded employers have the advantage is as you're looking for services that you can bring. You know, out in the fee-for-service world, there's no code to be able to engage a patient in care, right? There's no nobody's going to pay you to go find somebody in need in a fee-for-service, a Medicare or a Medicaid or maybe some Medicaid pilot projects, but not in a, you know, a Blue Cross or a United, et cetera, to go out and find patients in need. And so in order to even be able to do this assessment, right, the first step is we've got to get this person engaged and walking through our front door to be able to assess them. And I think that's where self-funded employers, especially who are working maybe with rural populations or have employees and employee families who might be members of underserved communities and populations that maybe have had difficulties accessing care or, like we mentioned, have a distrust of the healthcare system to some degree. How do you get them into care so that, you know, you can engage them in culturally competent care and identify what barriers do they have to them being able to achieve their optimal health? And so for self-funded employers, getting somebody through your on-site, near-site clinic, your direct primary care partner, through a pharmacy partner, talking to your TPA and seeing if they have services like this, Right. Or bringing somebody onto your team. We even work with clients who have this type of role where they've actually made it part of their HR or benefits department.
Oh, wow.
Where you actually have somebody who comes from a social work or a CHW background, whose job it is to be able to help with some of this wellness programming, but particularly coming from the community, coming from the population,
yeah,
and learning what they need to be able to be healthy, and bringing that back to HR, bringing that back to corporate leadership and saying, hey, we've got employees who, you know, they want to go to the doctor, but everybody carpools to work and nobody can just take the keys and run out for 30 minutes during lunch to go have an appointment.
That's right.
And then let's strategize and having a corporate transportation account for an Uber or Lyft or a taxi company that employees can access to go to these medical appointments. So I can't sing the praises of non-traditional providers enough. I think they're absolutely critical to really being able to advance care. And if you're a self-funded employer, look at bringing somebody like that onto your team to care for your employees. If you're fully insured, I would honestly say the same thing. Maybe you're hiring it through your benefits department instead of through an advanced primary care provider. But
yeah.
And I would encourage, if we have any policymakers listening, look for ways to expand access to CHWs and other non-traditional providers within the healthcare system. Be willing to invest in grant programs and pilots to see the value of this, because I think the return on investment is easily proven and has been. All right. Well, from Proactive MD and Mako, once again, I'm Jeremy Vanerknife.
And I'm Vinay Patel.
We'll see you next time.
Proactive MD.